to be American.
This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
The 26th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, ratified in 1971, effectively lowered the voting age from 21 to 18. Young people were asked to fight in the Vietnam War, which many of them opposed. They organized anti-war protests on school campuses all across the country. Old enough to fight, old enough to vote, became a common rallying cry. But these days, young people have not embraced their voting power in significant numbers. The youngest age group turns out to vote at the lowest rate compared to all other age groups, often by a significant amount. In the 2024 election, 47% of people aged 18 to 29 voted, compared to a nationwide turnout of about 64%. Among 18 and 19-year-olds, the turnout rate was 41%. In addition, 41% of young voters who have been 18 since 2020 did not vote in 2020, 2022, or 2024. So we have a major democracy problem when voters who will be affected for years to come do not participate. One reason is the hurdles they face to the ballot box, and that starts with registering to vote. Voter registration rates for young people are also the lowest among all age groups, and that's in spite of laws in many states that allow 16 or 17-year-olds to pre-register to vote so that they are on the voter rolls already once they turn 18. Yet many people don't know about these pre-registration opportunities, and high schools in many places, where we can find most of these young people, aren't doing enough to facilitate either voter registration or voter education. Our guest today wants to help, and she's built an organization to do just that. Laura Brill is the CEO and founder of The Civics Center, an organization focused on promoting voter registration for young people. It has recently issued a report on how well high schools facilitate voter registration among their students and what these schools can do better. In addition to being an advocate for high school voter registration, Laura is an attorney who served as a law clerk to Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Laura, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Hello, it's so great to be with you. Thank you for having me today.
So you launched the Civic Center in 2018. What spurred you to start an organization focused on pre-registering high school students?
I'll tell you, it was a lot of similarity to the statistics you were just reading. I have two kids, and they were teenagers at the time, and I was becoming, as many people were, very concerned about democratic backsliding in the United States that was, you know, starting even then, and the disengagement, I thought, or what that was reflected in low voter turnout and young people not understanding how and why to participate. And I just got very curious about what the obstacles were. As you said, I am a litigator by training. I have done a lot of election law litigation, and I just picked up a copy of the California Election Code where I live and found that we have this pre-registration law allowing young people to pre-register to vote starting at 16. And it was a kind of aha moment for me that I had no idea this law existed, even though I've practiced in the field, and even though I have two teens who could take advantage of this law. And I had known from experience that young people can do a lot in terms of organizing in high school. So if you can start at 16, there's a huge opportunity for young people themselves to get involved and start registering. And I just began to look at the statistics about low turnout and realized that the overwhelming driving force of low turnout is not apathy, it's lack of voter registration. And once young people are registered, they actually turn out to vote at very, very high rates, which is always was very surprising to me when I learned it and is surprising to most people.
I love that point about it being not about apathy. I'm working on a new project about non-voters. You know, who are these people who don't vote? Why are they not voting? And so many people, I think, believe that the non-voters are just apathetic. But your research and the Civic Center's research demonstrates that once we get people into the process, they're going to participate a lot more. So let's talk more about this pre-registration. And you yourself said you didn't realize that California had this possibility. So how many states allow pre-registration for 16 or 17-year-olds so that on their 18th birthday, they're automatically on the rolls?
Right. The laws are pretty interesting. There's 19 states and the District of Columbia all allow pre-registration at 16 or even earlier. Colorado now allows it at 15. There's 4 additional states where you can pre-register beginning at age 17. Then there's a bunch of states that might call it something different than pre-registration, but if you will be 18 by an upcoming election, you can actually get registered. So sometimes that means they're referring to the next federal general election, in which case, even in those states, even if they don't call it pre-registration, you actually have 2 years to register before your first election.
Mm-hmm. So, and let me just say that, you know, my state of Kentucky, 17-year-olds, if they're going to be 18 by the general election, can actually vote in the primary. So
that's
not
right.
Only can they register, but they can actually participate in the primary if they will be 18 by the November election.
One way we explain it that's a little easier to understand the impact is more than 50% of teens live in states where they can pre-register at 16 or earlier. There's about 20% more where they have at least a year before their first election in which they can sign up. And even in more restrictive states, I like to give Texas as an example, because in Texas, they do not allow you to submit a voter registration form until you're 17 years and 10 months old. So that's mm-hmm. ridiculous, honestly, and is, you know, youth voter suppression at its core, in my view. But even in Texas, almost everybody is old enough to take advantage of that law before they graduate from high school. And so the goal is to sort of marry the election calendar to the high school academic calendar and pick the right time and the right format for every school in America.
So the Civic Center's website has a map that shows each state and what their pre-registration rules are. And one thing I noticed when I was looking at that map is it's pretty clear the types of states that allow pre-registration at 16 years old. You've got essentially the states on the coast and the so-called blue states. I mean, there's a seemingly partisan divide where the more Democratic states allow this opportunity to 16-year-olds. And again, it's not to let them vote. It's to get them on the rolls. So when they're 18, they're automatically on the rolls. And it's the redder states that have more restrictive rules on this. So what do you make of that kind of partisan divide here?
Yeah. Let me just push back a little bit, because there are some red states that allow pre-registration at 16. And Utah, Florida, Louisiana all allow pre-registration at 16. And then there are purple states that do as well, including Michigan, North Carolina, Maine, Virginia. And so in my view, it's really a good government rule that allows a reasonable amount of time for young people as they are coming of age simply to sign up and get registered. And the reason it's so important and is, you know, first of all, it's very important, I just think, as you're coming of age, to do this as in an educational environment where you can reach everybody, including people who don't go to college, people who don't drive and so aren't taking advantage of, you know, DMV registration. The apathy stereotype that I think is very unfair to young people happens in part because young people are not on the voter registration rolls immediately. And so especially in local elections and state elections where the candidates may have very small budgets, they're reaching out to people who are registered voters. They don't have the bandwidth to do a big voter registration campaign. So we have to help young people break this cycle where they're not on the voter registration rolls, so candidates aren't speaking to them, and then they feel disenfranchised and uninvolved because the candidates don't know how to find them. To me, that's one of the most important parts of implementing this, so that as soon as they're 18, they're visible to the world and they can be part of the process and engage with candidates and campaigns.
That's a really good point that, you know, some people think, oh, once you get on the voter rolls, all that means is you can vote. But it means so much more because the candidates receive the list. You know, you can go to the state and get the voter registration list. And so those are the people you're going to target. So that kind of cycle you mentioned, I think, is really powerful.
Exactly. And pollsters, too. So young people, when they're not registered, the pollsters who are trying to find out what's on people's minds, what issues they care about, they have no way to find young people because they're just going to lists of registered voters or likely voters. And so it creates a huge gap of information and a distortion in democracy.
And of course, most of us do our voter registration either online or, but historically, at the motor vehicle office when we get our driver's license. And we also know that in many states, 16-year-olds, maybe 16 and a half, depending on your state, can get their driver's license. So is there something to say about kind of marrying this idea that we're letting people drive? Maybe we should let them get their voter registration at the same time?
Well, here's the biggest surprise to people that was to me about driver's licenses. So only 42% of 17-year-olds get driver's licenses in the United States. And it's even lower for 16-year-olds. The rates are really plummeting. And that is most true in urban areas and especially for low-income people in urban areas. There is a huge distortion that we see as a result of a lot of our voter registration systems being tied to departments of motor vehicles and online voter registration systems that people imagine are filling the gap. In most cases, you need a driver's license or state ID to use that online system. And so we've actually created these systems that people believe are working because they believe people are driving or they believe students can easily do something online. But it actually, because of changes in driving habits, is causing many people to be missed. And that's one of the reasons that high schools are such a natural place to get this done instead of relying on driving.
And of course, that has an effect on representation, because if it's the urban people who are less likely to be getting their driver's licenses, can't use the online forms, then the turnout rate is going to be lower for all the reasons we've discussed, which also has an impact on representation.
I'll just give you one example that's kind of shocking to me because the numbers continually shock me. New York State has pre-registration starting at 16. But in New York City, under 10% of the 16 and 17-year-olds are pre-registered.
Wow.
And that's the lowest we've seen. And so that creates a huge distortion within the state of city residents who have, you know, quite different needs than upstate residents in terms of transportation and social services and all kinds of things, simply as they're coming of age, not having access. And then the registration rates, that feeds into lower registration rates for young people in the city compared to upstate.
And I'll emphasize a point you made, which is we're not really talking so much about federal elections and the impact. So much of this happens at the state and even local level, where you're not getting that same kind of representation. We're speaking with Laura Brill of the Civics Center. Laura, the Civics Center just put out a report on high schools. You mentioned this, right? This is where we can find most of these people. And the report discusses the infrastructure in high schools that allow people who are there, typically, I guess, juniors or seniors who are 16, 17, 18 years old, to register if they're already 18 or at least pre-register in the places that allow it. So tell us just briefly the findings of this report about what high schools are doing and are not doing.
Yes, the biggest finding is that more than half of states have laws on the books today actually requiring high school students to help in some way or form with getting young people registered or pre-registered. And that can range from distributing voter registration forms in some cases. It can be having a special day or week set aside when voter registration will be incorporated into the school activities. It can involve requiring the school to actually report about what they've done to help students register and to incorporate voter registration into the educational programming of the school. And so these laws, like pre-registration, are almost entirely unknown. And in many instances, you know, what we find is that when we talk to school officials, there's no monitoring system in place in most places. There's no enforcement, and there isn't awareness among school officials that these laws exist and should be followed. But the thing I think many people assume that, you know, we think of a civic mission of schools, of creating young people who understand government, understand its effect on them, how it works, how to participate. And so these laws, which exist in a broad array of states, really reinforce that high schools are a place for nonpartisan voter registration and helping young people understand how they can become active citizens.
What would you say to boards of education or principals of high school for the best practices, things they should implement right away or in the near future to fix this issue?
Oh, I love that question. So, number one, get students involved in the effort, because there's a peer aspect to this that's very important. Voting is a social behavior, a social habit. And so having young people actually understand what the laws are, understand what the numbers are, and to be advocates for democracy, communicating to their peers, I would say that is the number one aspect. The others are, one of the interesting things we've found is that we often think of registration as purely a mechanical function, but many students don't even know you have to register. And when they are given this opportunity and told what to do, it helps them build incredible leadership skills in terms of planning a voter registration drive, communicating with their peers, setting goals, overcoming obstacles. And then it ties them to a democratic practice that they can embody throughout their lives. So, you know, so that's number one. And then, you know, planning for it, for a school to plan for it. When is it going to happen? Spring, the greatest number of people are 18 or are old enough to register or pre-register. Fall is good because people are animated by elections. You know, make sure that there's a person who's in charge of it. So basic programming that you would put in place for any kind of program that you wanted to succeed is what should be happening for voter registration.
I imagine one pushback that you receive is that although this is and has to be a nonpartisan effort, young people will skew Democratic. And so, you know, implementing these sorts of activities is just a partisan push in disguise. What's your response?
Yeah, most 16 and 17-year-olds are not registering with any political party. The plurality are no party preference at this stage. And so what voter registration is and historically has been seen as the classic nonpartisan effort, and we have a democracy, we have a future in our country that is for young people to inherit. And school is the best time for them to, you know, become analytically engaged in what policies exist out there. How do they affect them? What do they think of the balance between different priorities? And that's what most students are looking for, is an opportunity to engage and figure things out for themselves. The students we work with are not really interested in being told what to believe or think. They have their own experiences. Mental health is an example that I always like to bring up, because young people, regardless of geography, regardless of political orientation in this country, are facing a massive mental health crisis that is not getting the attention it deserves. And so, and many students who speak with us talk about mental health policy as something they're very concerned about. So I think it's a big mistake for people to focus on the partisan possibilities as opposed to the educational and democracy-oriented focus of the work.
What about teachers? I know many teachers are a little nervous, perhaps, that they'll be accused of trying to indoctrinate their students. I know that the Civic Center actually offers one-on-one conversations for any teacher who wants it. You have trainings. But what's your message to teachers, both about the importance of implementing these sorts of initiatives, but also about, you know, the fear of the partisan backlash?
Yeah. Number one is, and the reason we focused on these different state laws is that voter registration is part of high school life by law already. It's in statutes, it's in curriculum, it's in social studies standards. And so we encourage teachers, wherever they are, as we would in any enterprise, to tie this work to their existing social studies standards and what they are teaching. When we train students and educators, we speak very clearly about nonpartisanship and what that means in terms of creating an inclusive, welcoming, universal environment for everybody to participate. And when we talk to young people about it, sometimes we explain, you know, if you're a theater kid, make sure the athletes are coming. Because as I said, the students are not so much focused on a partisan divide. Many of them are focused much more on participation, understanding, belonging, making a difference. And so those are the things we emphasize, as well as looking at the assets, understanding the assets in your community. What do you value? How did it come to be? What's the role of government in that? How could it be better? And also local and state elections. These are the kinds of things that we think can help students engage in a way that feels comfortable for them, educationally appropriate, and completely nonpartisan.
And I'll emphasize once again for any teachers out there listening that the Civic Center's website has a spot for educators, including information about training and the opportunity to schedule a one-on-one conversation with an expert in this. Briefly, what's your message to high school students listening right now?
Well, my message is you can make a difference. Please sign up and get trained so that you can hold a voter registration drive in your high school. In most midterm elections, the registration rate for 18-year-olds this century has been under 30%. And that is just a shocking disenfranchisement of our young people. And young people all over the country have the power right now to just take matters into their own hands. They don't need to wait for a state legislature to pass a new law. As they come of age, they have a right to register to vote. They have a right to talk to their friends about voter registration. And so they can really be a catalyst to help a new generation as they're coming of age to have a much greater impact than they've had in the past. And the other thing I would just say is we hear sometimes from young people, some are quite dissatisfied with how democratic processes are working in terms of money in politics or gerrymandering or, you know, all the different flaws, the electoral college, all the different flaws that we have in democracy. And I would encourage young people to learn about those challenges and learn historically what people have done to improve democracy, because it's not static and they can really help make a difference.
Laura Brill is the CEO and founder of the Civics Center. You can learn more about the Civics Center at thecivicscenter.org. Laura, thank you for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thank you so much. It's been great to be here with you.
Josh, 41% of young voters who've been 18 since 2020 did not vote in 2020, 22, or 24. Any idea why?
I think it's a combination of factors. You know, Laura talked about the voter registration hurdles. We don't do enough on civic education. I'm not surprised by those numbers because we know that young people historically have not voted at the same level. But we need to do more to encourage people to do this. And the one point of Laura's interview that I thought was really interesting was this cycle she talked about, right? That candidates encourage people to vote, but they're only going to go after people who are registered because, of course, they're caring about, you know, the high value, the more likely people to turn out. And so when you have a lower registration rate, that leads to lower get out the vote efforts. And that is the cycle that we need to break.
Is it important to get into the habit of voting at an early age?
100%. Political science studies show that one of the most accurate predictors of whether someone's going to vote is if they voted previously. Voting is habit forming. And there are additional studies that show that if you miss the first election when you're an eligible voter, you're much less likely to become a habitual voter. So that first election when you are eligible is really key to determining whether you're likely to participate in future elections. And if you miss that one, the likelihood that you become that habitual voter goes way down. So I think it's really important to be focusing on young people, focusing on high school, and getting people to turn out in that first election when they're eligible.
Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas is our writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm the series producer, Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Eli Raymond and Landon Palmer, research assistants, Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer, and Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.
I can educate myself on the fight.